Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Winds of Change here at CFUV Radio 101.9 FM. We're heard online at cfuv.uvic.ca, and we're also on the Facebook and the Twitter. My name's Janine Bancroft. I'm broadcasting live this morning from the beautiful University of Victoria, which is located on unceded Coast Salish Lekwungen territory. And in the next hour, I'm going to be speaking with a couple of lovely, informed, powerful women. One is Vasanto Molina in the second half. She's a registered vegan dietitian, and so we're going to pursue some more information about how to eat a healthy plant-based diet and save your health and save the planet at the same time. And in the half, I hopefully will get a hold of Eric from Social Coast for an update on what those folks are doing. But in the first segment, I have the wonderful great-grandmother Betty Croswick on the line. And Betty, for folks who aren't aware, she is originally from Louisiana. She has been a political candidate and probably most famously a political prisoner. She's been in jail over the years for her efforts to stop the logging of ancient forests and highway developments through them. And she's authored several books, some of those during the time that she was in prison. Clackwit, The Sound of My Heart, Lock Me Up or Let Me Go, The Protest, Arrest, and Trial of an Environmental Activist and Grandmother, Open Living, Confidential from Inside the Joint, This Dangerous Place, My Journey Between the Passions of the Living and the Dead. She blogs at bettysearlyedition.blogspot.ca, and today we're going to be talking a little bit about her newest book, Betty, Bluebell, and Bitch. Betty, are you there?
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Janine.
What a title. And so the title sort of sums up this book that you've dedicated to Harriet Nahani. Perhaps we should introduce Harriet and her wonderful legacy.
Yes, Harriet was the Squamish elder who stood on the blockades with us at Eagle Ridge Bluff in 2006, even though her own chiefs and council had made deals with the BC government and traded over the Squamish rights to Eagle Ridge Bluff. But Harriet, living on the reserve, and her children and grandchildren being on the reserve, was in opposition to this, and she stood alone in her opposition. She came out to blockade the thugs. She was arrested with us. She was eventually sentenced to 2 weeks in prison. And after she was released, she died less than a week after she was released. She caught pneumonia in prison. Now, she did have some health issues, and I tried to explain to the judge that she had health issues. And I wrote this into I wrote the judge a letter before Harriet was sentenced. The judge disregarded this letter. She sentenced Harriet, and you know, it so angered me because First Nations people who have been to residential school have now the protection of the court to be treated with a certain amount of delicacy in their aftermath of suffering from the residential school. They're not supposed to be totally rude and unyielding to First Nations people, as Madam Justice Brown was to Harriet Nahani. She wouldn't hardly let her speak, or she just cut her off. She stood up and walked off the bench rather than listen to Harriet read the proclamation of 1763. So it was, she was very ill-treated by the court. She caught pneumonia in a Surrey pretrial, and she died shortly after she was released. Now, Harriet Do you want me to continue with this?
Sure.
Listen, when I start talking, I don't know when to stop. So you have to stop me, okay?
All right. I will. No, that's fine, because I know you've dedicated this book to her, and she inspired it. And the highway that you speak of, that you were standing on, that was the highway that was being developed for the 2010 Olympics, right?
Oh, that's right. That would shave off about 3 to 10 minutes of people getting to the Olympics, getting to Whistler, hugely important to the BC Liberal government, Gordon Campbell and their government. One of the huge things about this was they wanted that development up on top so they could, they wanted the amenities brought to Eagle Ridge Bronx so they could develop some of these huge lots for multi-million dollars. So it was a very, very unfeeling and thinking undemocratic. It was a complete disregard for the health and well-being of people and for the environment. That was a beautiful urban forest. It's rare. There aren't very many around large cities where people can actually get on the bus and go to a forest, a city bus. So it was very rare. It's our beautiful forest. There were wetlands. And the way this book was inspired both by Harriet and her dedication to what she felt was the right thing to do. But she gave me a piece of paper before she died. It was called, it was a version of the Stockholm Syndrome. And Harriet, and my book is about trying to unravel this version of the Stockholm Syndrome and what it meant to Harriet and the First Nations people, and what it meant to me as a woman who was working on women's issues. So the book is about trying to understand the connection here between the Aboriginal people, the environment, women's issues as a whole. And because I have a very active imagination, I have people in my psyche that sort of occupy what I call my inner house. Everybody has these people. Freud initiated this concept where there is the id that is a person who just wants to do a certain thing. It's usually associated with the child wanting immediate gratification. And that's called the id. Then there's the adult who knows they can't just do everything that they would like to do. And then there's the super adult who is always complaining to the adult that they are not doing enough. The super adult is very judgmental. So everybody has more or less, according to psychiatrists, but in speaking to people, everybody that I've ever spoken to about this is aware of these three different impulses within the human psyche. And I went a step further and personified these other two parts of myself.
Oh, okay.
I am the adult, but there is a super adult hanging around, and also which is a child. So I have named these, I've given them names, given them personalities, brought the arguments surrounding environment, Aboriginals, and women in general to the forefront, and the one who acts as a drag, as the child as someone who doesn't really want to grow up is Bluebell, and she's young and while she's traditional and doesn't want anything to disrupt her pretty world. Bitch is an old woman. She is ancient. She is very upfront. She's cynical. She's argumentative. So these three entities sort of fight it out. You know what, Janine? It is a nonfiction. The events that happen are true. But it's a creative nonfiction in that I bring forth the elements of the arguments surrounding these issues and give them personalities and give them the right to speak their piece. And the book is comes to, well, it has to be resolved or I can't evolve, so the ending of the book is where one of the characters tells me that I have to get rid of the other one. They have to be killed, as it were, in my psyche, or I can't progress as I can't progress intellectually or spiritually, or psychically. And the ending of the story is trying to find a way in which men and women can be more alike, because this war between the sexes, this difference in the genders is both a construct, artificial construct, and it's, but part of it also is biological, in my opinion. So at the crux of the book is reaching for a way in which men and women can come together so that women can protect children in the environment, but the only way I can see to do this is if there is a kind of evolution of a psychic androgyny, and Mary Daly speaks of this in her books, and that interests me very much, because as long as the sexes are so divided around violence and attraction to violence and to doing things in a violent way, in that of not caring for the feelings or the personal development of other people, preferring masculine, what's come to be typed as masculine ways of looking at the world, which is you know, and you have to be stronger than the other entity, whatever it is you're fighting. You have to be brutal. You have to, and this is business. It's in war. It's in business. It's in government. It's in everything. This masculine way of conquering the world is killing the world. And women have to get out there and say, we are tired of this business. The world is being literally destroyed by these concepts. And women have to do this. They just must, because men obviously can't or won't. And so if women, in my opinion, if we want our children, our grandchildren to live, to prosper, if we want the natural world to continue to evolve with its wonderful, many, many physical, stunningly beautiful and so stay connected. And if we want this, we are really just going to have to fight for it, because it's reaching a stage where, unless it's reversed in some way, we're going to lose the human race, because our children are coming up and our grandchildren and great-grandchildren are coming up in a world that is increasingly polluted, where the air doesn't have the oxygen in it even that it used to have to breathe right now, where our land is polluted and becoming increasingly so, and the politicians and the corporations and the banks continue to escalate this destruction. So if we don't stop it, if we don't find ways to come together, if women don't, then we're going to lose it. We just really are. And nature right now, Mother Nature, she's finding ways to try to moderate what's happening. She will do her best, and raising the temperature of the earth is one way to get rid of a lot of different species,
right,
including humans.
Right. I mean, I think from the earth's perspective, we're like a virus, and male and female. And I have to interject here, Betty, because, you know, some of the kindest, gentlest people I know are actually of the male persuasion, and I know some women who are pretty horrible. You know, I think of Maggie Thatcher, for example, or Condoleezza Rice, or Ann Coulter, or, you know, this woman, Madam Justice Brown, who you mentioned, who tried, who sent Harriet away. You know, I mean, so I'm curious, like, do you sort of think that these are women who are not behaving in a way that is natural to
They have become so masculinized in their thinking, like law, and politics are extremely masculine activities. Because unless women think the way men think, who are in the top positions, they won't get to be associated with, or they won't get any of these top positions themselves. And there is nothing more masculinized than law. You stand in that courtroom, and I've been in that courtroom so many times, so half the time I've felt like a lawyer, because so much of it sinks into you. How every shred of the seeking the justice of any issue is obliterated by the ability of an individual lawyer to bring out some points that the other lawyer doesn't have at his or her disposal. And these judges are in British Columbia, well, in all of Canada, they're most of their backgrounds, the huge, biggest proportion of the backgrounds, is in corporate law. So they are not, I don't count them as being women who are going to do anything to further the human race. I put them in the same category as the men in these same positions. For instance, look at Hillary Clinton. I have seen her evolve from when Bill Clinton was governor of Arkansas. She did a lot of things. She wrote this book, It Takes a Village to Raise a Child. She was very interested in the children at this time when she was young. Now when she speaks, as Secretary of State, well, she's not there anymore, but she will come back probably and run for president. She very well may be elected. You can't tell any difference from what she's saying and what Obama is saying about, the wars and the drones and the evilness of the countries that they want to get in and get their oil. She might as well be one of them. Well, she is one of them. So it's not these women that I'm looking to. I'm looking to ordinary women who are very concerned about their children and who are very concerned about what's happening to the environment. And you see hordes of these women everywhere who are involved in environmental issues or who take care of children, who worry about children, who take active parts in the community, who do more than their share. And there is million more of these women than there are these other kind. These other kind are actually a rarity. Hmm. They're there, but they're very rare. And they have certainly, we're not going to look to them to do women and children any good. For instance, you have the woman who is the head of the Status of Women of Canada. Go up and say she agreed with, you know, bringing the abortion issue back on the agenda. She's actually not a woman in the sense of being identified with other women. She identifies with men and what it is that men want. And these male-identified women are not going to help forward the evolution of the human race. Now, we all have men that we know, that we love, and that we respect, and that we admire, and that we learn from. We all have this, just about. I have it. You know, I have sons, I have grandsons, I have relatives, and I have many friends, male friends, who I love. But it is not these men. It is not these men, because there's many more men who had rather not think about it, anything like that. They had rather go to ball games, you know, watch pornography, do whatever, who are not, who are easily distracted. And I think that I've been in movements all of my life that were both male and female movements. And it's because we are all conditioned to feel that men should lead. We just are. Men expect it and women expect it. And it's very hard to get women out of this mold. Women have to say, children are the priority in this world. They are the most important thing in this world, along with the environment. And we are adamantly opposed to anything that takes away the
hello. No way. We can fill in the end of that sentence ourselves, I guess. Betty's disappeared from our phone line. The wonderful Betty Croswick. I don't know what happened. That happened a couple of weeks ago, too. I don't understand what happens here. But technology, you know. So that was Betty Croswick, her new book, Betty, Bluebell, and Bitch. And I'll try to contact her later and fill in the gaps there, what she was finishing up saying. I think we get the gist of where she's coming from and on that. I will shift over now and make an effort to get a hold of Eric Nordahl from the Social Coast to provide us with an update of what's going on around town in some of the activist circles. Stay tuned. You're listening to CFUV 101.9 FM. In the meantime, I'll leave you with Mumia Abu-Jamal. Happy birthday yesterday to Mumia.
Another April 24th. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm not really big on my birthday. Many years, I forget it entirely. So don't expect a big birthday speech. But every so often, I think of a birthday that is really hard to forget. It's April 24th, 1996, when the President of the United States signed into law an act known as the AEDPA, or the Anti-Terrorism Effective Death Penalty Act, which transformed habeas corpus from its previous 700 years of history. The law severely limited, restricted, and denied federal habeas corpus to people who would have been entitled to it before the act became law. I remember my lawyers mentioning it, but frankly, I couldn't believe. Wait a minute, the government changing a law, habeas corpus, for me? Y'all tripping, I said. But they weren't. In a way, I was. Is that just coincidence? At a press conference, my name came up, and Pennsylvania Governor Edward Rendell said as much on tape. But why should I be surprised? Hadn't every court ignored its own precedents when it came to my case? The law, it seems, is only politics by other means. We must build a movement that frees us all from such a system. I won't say happy birthday. I'll only say on the move, freedom for all. From Imprison Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Want to know who's changing the way we eat? Come find out on Monday, April 29th at Food Talks. Hear from locals who are part of a greater food movement and help create more sustainable food systems. Local foods will be served at 7:30 p.m. with the Food Talks starting at 8 p.m. at the Belfry Theater. Tickets are available through the Belfry box office and online. For more info, visit crfair.ca.
All right, you're listening to CFUV Radio 101.9 FM. I'm really sorry. Whatever happened to Betty, I'm not sure. She blogs, by the way, at bettysearlyedition.blogspot.com. And now we'll move over to Eric Nordell to tell us what's happening in the Social Coast. Are you there, Eric?
Sure am. Yep.
All right.
I'm on the line.
All right. You're enjoying this beautiful sunny day?
It is beautiful. Yeah. Outside right now.
Right on. What's going on in the world of activism?
Oh, people are busy. People are always busy, right? Lots going on. This weekend, there's a pretty exciting event happening up at UVic. It is a decolonizing workshop teaching settlers about how good ally skills and ways that we can support Indigenous sovereignty movements that are happening all around BC and have been happening all around. It's called Blocking the Gateway and Sharing Responsibilities to Stop the Pacific Trail Pipeline. There's great speakers coming down from the Unist'ot'en camp that are coming to speak to the crowd about what's going on up there this summer in regards to all the pipeline construction that they've been trying to push through, and this group's been obviously successfully stopping it so far. That's happening from 9:30 in the morning until 6:30. You can go online and reserve your spot. There's only room for about 60 people. I think it's pretty close to filled up, but not quite there yet. Blockingthegateway.com is the URL or the website that you can go to. And it's on the calendar too, on the Social Coast calendar if you need a little more information. And then Such Sunday, the next day after, the Forest Action Network and Zoe are putting on a great little fundraiser called The Harder They Come. It's a radical burlesque and drag show. And that's happening at the Norway House on Monday night. Tickets are still available. I can't remember how much they are, but you can get a hold of Zoe through the wildcoast.ca, or it's on the calendar again. So those are the two exciting things happening this weekend. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Carry on.
Okay. Some other little fun stuff happening as well. On the corner of Pandora and Vancouver, the St. Andrews, it's a private school right now, but there's a condo development that's proposed for that corner.
Oh,
I'm not too sure if you've heard of that.
I hadn't.
I think North Park is the next neighborhood for, all the new condos and stuff that are going to be proposed. There's a lot of new development that's planned in this neighborhood, but there's definitely some groups around the North Park community that are going to be actively opposing that stuff. So if you walk around near that property, or there's one on Balmoral as well, some people have put up some chalkboards with some chalk attached, and it's just kind of a community project where people can go and just stay what they would like to see instead of a condo. And so there's some pretty interesting answers, and it's great, you know, and a lot of people have been throwing out their opinions. So I think that's going to be the first step towards an anti-gentrification campaign in North Park that'll be going on this summer as well.
Right on. Yeah, that's kind of one of the more, you know, working class neighborhoods, and we need places that are affordable. We need to maintain neighborhoods for those of us who aren't working the corporate jobs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and then the Pecoltha reclaiming is coming up, right?
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. So we just, I guess, launched that, the website and the video, just earlier this week. Yeah, pretty exciting. That's happening on May 22nd, so we've still got just about a month, but it's happening on a Wednesday at 5 o'clock. Yeah, and so if you're interested at all, any of the people listening, if you want to help out in terms of getting the word out, there's lots of stuff that needs to get done between now and then. So, but yeah, it's pretty exciting.
And Pecoltha, that's the traditional name of Mount Douglas. So you're hoping to just really reclaim the name? Is it, or beyond that, and raise awareness? Anything beyond that?
Yeah, I think the name reclamation itself is it's more than just a symbol, or it's more than just a name. I mean, I think it shows a lot of respect to the people that were, you know, obviously here a long time before and had place names all over this island that, you know, we've kind of literally paved over those things, named them, you know, different street names like Sutledge and Bagby and mountains like Mount Doug. Yeah, I think it's a very important step for reclaiming, for these nations to reclaim not only just the names, but also, you know, people can understand, like, this is traditional territory, these are traditional places, and it's an important part of their culture.
Right, there were people here that with communities and societies and legal justice systems that we have no idea about, because it was all, like you say, literally paved over, right? So, okay, May 22nd on in Mount Douglas, we can just go there and we'll find you, I guess.
Yeah, well, 5 o'clock, it's at the base of the hill. There's going to be different people with their vehicles picking everyone up from, like, the different territory or the different nations, the band council offices. We're going to, if people need a ride, people driving, carpooling, and there's also going to be a critical mass bike ride from downtown. So if people want to bike to get there after work or whatever, from about 4 o'clock on Wednesday. That's an option as well. But yeah, we're just asking people to meet at the base of the hill. The hereditary chief that's leading this action will lead a march up to the top. Then there's going to be a reenactment of the signing of the Douglas Treaty, which is actually a very interesting story and something that at least I know I wasn't taught in school.
Right.
And yeah, and then there's going to be installation of the sign that has information about what the traditional name is and some of the history.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. Thanks so much, Eric. So people can go to your website, socialcoast.org.
Yeah,
right.
You got it.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks so much, Eric.
Awesome. Okay, thanks for having me on the show.
All righty. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Social Coast, a great bunch of young activist folk in town doing all kinds of good stuff. And I'm just going to play a song from the Cowboy Junkies, who are in town tonight at the Alex Golden Hall, which is in the neighborhood that Eric was speaking about, at the corner of Quadra and Pandora. So I don't know what ticket prices are or anything like that, but this is a song from their CD called We Are the Selfish Ones, and then I will go attempt to get a hold of my next guest. You're listening to The Winds of Change at CFUV Radio 101.9 FM.
Shack, the lake beside him freezing. Sun no longer shining much past 4 o'clock. all things change to something new. Yeah, something strange. We are the selfish ones. We are the lucky ones.
The Cowboy Junkies, they're in town in Victoria tonight at the Alex Goulden Hall. Now, on the line, I have Vasanto Molina, and she's in Vancouver. She is a registered dietitian specializing in vegan and raw nutrition, food allergies and sensitivities, and healthful eating. She has co-authored several books that have been translated into other languages. There's over 250,000 of her books in print in 7 different languages and 15 different countries, including books with titles like Becoming Vegan, The Raw Revolution Diet, The Food Allergy Survival Guide, and Becoming Raw. And Vasanto has taken some time today to speak with us. Good morning, Vasanto.
Good morning, Janine.
Good morning. All right. And thank you for taking the time. We were going to talk, I was hoping we could talk a little bit today about the health benefits of being, and especially being raw, because I think there's a lot of people who are kind of moving in that direction. Do you want to just sort of talk a little bit about why people are moving in that direction?
Okay. Well, people are moving in the direction of being vegan. And I want, you know, for our listeners to realize that even taking a few steps in that direction can be a very health supportive thing to do. So, you know, like having one more big salad a day if you didn't do that before, so people don't have to think that they need to jump 100% into being entirely vegan or being raw to get some benefits. But when we look at the literature about being vegan, we find that it significantly reduces your risk. And this is meaning eating only plant foods. That reduces your risk of cardiovascular disease, cuts it by about 25% and more, and also of different types of cancer. The hormone-related cancers, of course, we know that hormones are given to animals, and there are many components in the flesh of animals that increase our risk of cancer and heart disease. So people's risk of colon cancer is reduced by about 40%, and of the hormone-related cancers, like breast and prostate cancer, by about 25%. And so, and then some of the studies are showing that the reduction in risk is even more than that. So people are really getting interested in moving in the direction of eating more plant foods.
Okay, that's cool. You know what, I'm sorry, I'm just going to have to interrupt for a minute, because we've got kind of a difficult, we're having difficulty hearing you. Are you on a cell phone?
I could try a different phone.
Is that possible? Okay. Or just be in a different location, perhaps? It's just such good good information. We want to hear from
Hello?
You. There you are. Okay. Are you still there?
Hi,
Hi. Okay, that's a bit better. All right. So you were saying that
that better?
Yes. Yes. So moving in the plant based. That's much better. So the plant based is going to help reduce our risk of heart disease and cancer.
Heart disease and of cancer. And these are the types of cancer that we get in North America, which are the hormone related cancers for women of breast and ovaries, for men of prostate. All those are reduced when we adopt a vegan diet. Okay. Now, we don't have enough statistics on those about raw vegan diets. We find that people who come entirely raw or eat a high raw diet have a lot of the indicators of lower risk of cancer and heart disease, but we don't have enough statistics yet to really show what's going on. What we do have for raw vegan diets is that people's risk of fibromyalgia and rheumatoid arthritis are significantly less. There have been some really good studies where people moved on to raw vegan diets and found about 40% of the people found that their incidence of their symptoms of fibromyalgia dropped, and for others that the symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis dropped. So not for everybody, but for many of them. And it seems that maybe they cut out some of the big allergens like eggs and dairy and meat and meats and fish.
Really, because a lot of people, sorry to interrupt, it seems like a lot of people, we're still having not the best phone line, but we're working with it. A lot of people I talk to, as they're progressing, you know, away from a meat-based diet, the first thing they give up is the red meat, and then the last thing they give up is the fish. But fish actually can...
Right.
Yeah, why? Now, fish is not really all that good for us, is it?
Really clear that red meat is not good for us. And processed red meats are considered basically carcinogens. They cause cancer. And that's come up from the American Institute of Cancer Research. And red meat itself is a probable cause of cancer. So a lot of people are aware of that, and they're going, I better switch over to chicken and fish. And chicken looks like it's better. It's only when it's substituted for red meat it's better. It's not really a health food, that's for sure. I mean, the chickens are given hormones. They have a number of health disadvantages. They certainly have cholesterol. They contain saturated fat. A fish are a problem because, as you know, we dump all sorts of things into the oceans, and they have mercury and other contaminants that are in ocean water. And, you know, people are advised to avoid fish during pregnancy, reduce their intake a lot of the ones that have these contaminants in them, which is a lot of them. And we also find that there are easy ways to get all the nutrients on a plant-based diet. So people are just becoming more and more aware as those studies that are done on huge population groups as they hit the headlines.
Right, right. Okay, and one of the things that you've written about recently on your blog, Vasanto, at vasantomelina.com, is about the acid-alkaline balances, and this isn't something that I became aware of until I became vegan, and this is something that we need to think about, isn't it? Because if we have too much of an acid situation in our body, that's when the cancers and everything can manifest, isn't that right?
This is just a theory, so it's not something that's really well established yet. But I'll tell you how the theory works, is that the foods such as meat and cheese, especially the processed cheeses, different fish, chicken, and also grains, will move your pH, the acidity of your blood, in an acid direction, whereas vegetables and fruits move your pH, your acidity of the blood, in an alkaline direction. And for good health, you need to be slightly in an alkaline direction. And so your body has to work like crazy to bring the pH into the right range, which is just very slightly alkaline, If you're eating a lot of meat and cheese and bread, you know, just think like a cheeseburger is just putting you over the top in terms of its acidity effect. And then your body has to do things like take calcium from your bones and do other compensatory measures just to bring your body back to the right pH. So this is definitely theoretical at this point, but it is clear that the vegetables and fruits take you in a more healthful direction.
Okay, cool. Lots of good reasons.
We've talked about this in our book, Becoming Raw, explaining the theory and how it works. And, so there's a lot of interest following this pattern. It was something that was known in the Asian approach, looking at nutrition and health. For a long time, they've been aware of acid-based diets. And I think Western science is just starting to take a good look at it.
And in Chinese traditional medicine has a much more holistic view of the body's systems.
In certain ways, yeah. In certain ways, we could learn from each other.
Right. And I don't know if you want to talk about the China study, because that seems to be the most, the newest sort of most comprehensive study in this regard.
Well, there's actually a lot of even better studies than that. The China study had some interest, because there were people that had been in villages where they didn't move very much, that you could really see how the diet affected the incidence of cancer, and that's very valuable. And it's really inspired a lot of people to choose a plant-based diet, and for very good reasons. There have been some other studies, such as the Epic Oxford studies, where they were looking at, for example, 60,000 people over a long term, seeing what they got sick with, what they died of, maybe over 10, 20-year period. And what they found was that the vegetarians and vegans particularly had the best body weight. They had the lower incidence of cancer. They had less cardiovascular disease and far less diabetes. They also found similar results in the Adventist studies, which are based across Canada and North America, the United States. And these were, in both cases, the Oxford Epic study and the Adventist studies, these are really healthy people. So, they had pretty healthy diets, even eating. They might not only be eating meat once a week. And then there were fish eating, and there were vegetarians, which don't use any fish or poultry, and then there were vegans. So they could look and see what happened with these different dietary groups. But even the meat-eating ones were eating a pretty healthy diet. And so what they found was that the incidence of different chronic diseases were far lower in the vegan group, and they also found that the body weights were better in the vegan group. For example, in the Adventist study, the only ones that were within the optimal weight range, under 25 BMI, were the vegans. All the others were above that on average.
How about that? Okay, and there you go. And there's
not just in China that we find these things. We're finding, because in the China study, the ones in the little villages where they had less cancer, they were on a plant-based diet.
Right.
They sure weren't drinking dairy products.
Right.
They couldn't afford to eat meat, and they were just eating grains and vegetables and legumes.
Well, and then there's, the environmental reasons why we all can consider moving to a vegan diet, and of course the animal rights component. But let's stay with the health. I know we've just got a couple of minutes left, I know you also wrote an article about fiber for the health of keeping the digestive system processing. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
That's right. Now we find that our risk of colon cancer and the different gastrointestinal-related cancers is way less with a plant-based diet, like half as much, basically. And that's because fiber is only in plant foods, and it helps sweep out all the toxins. It carries carries materials that we don't want, carcinogens and so on, right through the intestine and out. So flatware is kind of like the little broom or the roto-rooter of the intestinal tract, and we only get fiber in plant foods. Just so it's not advising people to take a fiber pill. What you need is the grains, the vegetables, the fruits, the nuts and seeds, the legumes. These have an abundant and quite varied types of fiber, and they lower our risk of disease, cancer, keep us in good health, less diabetes, and they also help us keep a good body weight.
So for those of us in Canada, you know, we place a lot of value on our health care system, our universal health care, and if we can stay healthy, then we're going to be less taxing on that system, right? So
that's right.
Yeah.
We've got a new book coming out in June that will be the first. We are updating our book, Becoming Vegan, which is a very, very popular book. But we have an express edition, which is about the size of the version we did in 2000, you know, about 300 pages. And it'll be good, quick, concise little summaries about the different aspects of how to be vegan in excellent health. So that's Becoming Vegan. And then we're having, in September, will come out a professional or comprehensive edition, which is twice as big, and it's referenced all the way through. And we find that a lot of dietitians, physicians, health professionals use our book, and also vegetarians who want to get a really in-depth look at things. And our books are used as college course material.
Right on.
So people are really interested in this, and we really rely on good scientific backing for the different areas. We want people to be in good health wherever they are in the spectrum, but moving more and more towards a plant-based diet.
Right. Okay. And I know that you write regularly for Common Ground magazine, which is a fantastic publication that we do have access to here. It's a free publication in Victoria. And are you going to be here to speak at our second annual Vegan Fest this year on July 1st, Vasanto?
In Victoria?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm double booked for that day.
Oh.
So I don't think I'll be able to. I've been invited, and I'd love to. I was just there a while ago. I love the little Greek cuisine restaurant and that whole area, Market Square, and the festival. So I'll do my best. I'll see if it's a possibility. But
my
website is...
The third annual, for sure, anyways, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Oh,
we appreciate.
Thank you. Thank you. And so people can find out more about you and your books at vasantomolina.com.
And also NutriSpeak.com.
NutriSpeak.com. Okay, thanks, Melina. Sorry, Vasanto. Have a great day.
Bye, Denise.
Bye-bye. Thank you. All right, sorry for the phone line. I'm never sure in situations like that if I should just cancel it and move on, but I think hopefully people got enough information there. We're coming to the end of the show. You're, of course, going to stay tuned for Democracy Now! And all the great programming that happens here at CFUV. I'm going to leave you with a song from Kiran Aluwalia. She is going to be in town on Saturday night at the Alex Goulden Hall, and wish you all a great couple of weeks. In this time slot next week is Mehdi Najjari with The Hidden News, and you're listening to CFUV 101.9 FM.
Well, here we are. It's April 20. Namaste, 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 Namaste 'cause I